Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today, we're tackling a Supreme Court case that's really a cornerstone for understanding civil rights law, especially for you law students out there. St. Francis College v. Al-Khazraji from 1987.
Mm-hmm.
On the surface, it seems like it's about racial discrimination, pretty straightforward. But, you know, when you actually peel back the layers, it reveals some really fascinating historical shifts in how we even understand race, and those legal implications still echo today.
Exactly. This case really forces you to stop and think, what do we mean by race? And crucially, how has that definition changed over time? Al-Khazraji poses a question that looks simple, but, well, the answer is surprisingly nuanced.
Okay, so here's the basic setup. We have Dr. Majid Kadan Al-Khazraji. He's a U.S. citizen, born in Iraq, and a professor at St. Francis College. Back in 1978, he gets denied tenure.
Right.
He argues this denial was racial discrimination under 42 U.S.C. Section 1981. Now, that's a law dating all the way back to the Reconstruction era, right after the Civil War.
Yeah, really old statute.
But here's the twist. The college pushes back. They basically say, look, people of Arabian ancestry are considered Caucasian by modern standards. So their argument is, how can this be racial discrimination?
And that's the fascinating clash, isn't it? This collision between, you know, modern racial categories and the actual historical context of this really important civil rights law.
So how did that play out initially in the courts?
Well, the district court actually agreed with the college at first. They dismissed Dr. Al-Khazraji's case.
Oh, okay.
But then the Third Circuit Court of Appeals saw it differently. They reversed that decision, and that disagreement basically paved the way for the Supreme Court to step in and grant certiorari, meaning they agreed to hear the case.
Okay, so let's really untangle this. What was the central legal knot the Supreme Court had to unravel here?
The core question was this. Does Section 81's ban on racial discrimination cover discrimination based on someone's ancestry or ethnicity, even if that group, like Arabs in this case, is considered Caucasian today?
It really puts pressure on a purely biological idea of race, doesn't it?
Absolutely. The court couldn't just apply a 1980s definition of race. They had to dig into the original intent behind Section 81. And remember, that law came directly from the Civil Rights Act of 1866.
Right, Reconstruction era. So what did they find?
Their focus wasn't on some fixed biological definition. Instead, they looked at what Congress was trying to do back in 1866, right after the Civil War. And their reasoning kind of turned on this idea that the goal was to protect specific, identifiable classes of people from discrimination based on their ancestry or their ethnic traits.
So they were saying that back in 1866, race was understood differently, more about like perceived group identity.
Precisely. If you look at the 19th century, you see lots of groups that we might lump together today being viewed as distinct races. Think about how people talked about the Irish or Germans or Jewish people.
Yeah, that's true.
The court actually pointed this out, this fluidity. They noted that even within the broad category we now call Caucasian, people made sharp distinctions based on ethnicity and origin. And crucially, they specifically mentioned that Arabs were among the groups considered a distinct race back when the Civil Rights Act was passed.
Wow, okay. That really shifts the perspective. So when the court looked at Dr. Al-Khazraji's situation, the question wasn't, is he biologically different? It was more like,
was he intentionally discriminated against because he was born an Arab because of that specific ancestry?
Right, intentional discrimination tied to ancestry.
Exactly. And there's a quote from the majority opinion that just nails it. If respondent can prove intentional discrimination because he was born an Arab, he has a Section 1981 claim. The key words there are intentional discrimination linked directly to his Arab ancestry.
Hmm. So it's not just about being from Iraq, the national origin part.
No, that's a critical distinction. It had to be about targeting his ethnic identity as an Arab.
And Justice Brennan really hammered that point home in his concurring opinion, didn't he? About the difference between ancestry and national origin.
Yes. Brennan's concurrence is super helpful here. He really clarifies that nuance. He stressed that, look, ancestry and national origin can overlap, obviously, but they aren't the same thing legally in this context.
Can you give an example?
Sure. Like, someone could be born in the U.S., that's their national origin, but have, say, Korean ancestry and identify ethnically as Korean. Brennan's point, and the court's ruling, suggests that discrimination based on that Korean ancestry or ethnicity could potentially fall under Section 1981, It's not just about where you were born.
Okay.
And Brennan also made this broader point, you know, that racial distinctions themselves are often more about social and political ideas, these constructs, mm-hmm. rather than strict biology.
Right, which fits with the court looking back at the 1866 understanding.
Exactly.
Okay, so let's fast forward. We're talking about a case from 1987 interpreting an 1866 law. Why does this still matter today? What are the, like, modern takeaways for civil rights law?
This is where Al-Khazraji's lasting impact really shows. It significantly broadened how we understand the protection offered by Section 1981. It basically set a precedent that protects a much wider range of ethnic and ancestral groups from intentional discrimination.
Even if those groups aren't seen as separate races today.
Yes, even if they fall under broad categories like Caucasian or others in modern classifications. Think about people who might face bias because they are Middle Eastern or Sikh or Latinx. This ruling gives them a potential legal tool to challenge intentional discrimination based on that heritage.
So if someone from, say, a Middle Eastern background faces discrimination at work, they could potentially use Al-Khazraji. They could argue, hey, this isn't just about where my parents were born. It's discrimination targeting my Arab or Persian or whatever ancestry, even if someone tries to say, but you're Caucasian.
That's the potential power of it, yes. It confirms that Section 1981, as the court interpreted it, cares about the reality of discrimination based on heritage, not just rigid and maybe outdated racial boxes.
But there's a catch, right? The intentionality part.
Absolutely vital. The court was clear. The plaintiff must show the discrimination was intentionally linked to their ancestry or ethnic characteristics.
Mm-hmm.
Can't just be based on, say, their place of birth alone or their religion, although those can sometimes overlap. That burden of proving intent is still a major factor in these cases.
Okay, so let's try to sum up the main takeaway from St. Francis College v. Al-Khazraji. What's the bottom line for our listeners, especially the law students?
The bottom line is that this Reconstruction-era law, Section 1981, isn't stuck in the 19th century. The Supreme Court basically said that racial discrimination in the context of this law includes intentional discrimination based on a person's ancestry and ethnic characteristics.
So it broadened the definition beyond just modern biological race categories.
Exactly. You recognize that discrimination happens against groups perceived as distinct because of their heritage, even if today's labels might group them differently. It's about the perception and the intent to discriminate based on that group identity.
Which means the law can be flexible enough to address prejudice as it shows up, even in new or evolving ways.
Precisely.
Yeah.
And it really highlights why understanding the history behind these laws is so crucial. You can't fully grasp how they apply today without knowing where they came from and how their interpretation has, well, evolved.
It definitely leaves you thinking, doesn't it? Especially for law students grappling with current issues. How does this historical lens on race and discrimination shape today's debates about identity, about equal protection, especially in a society that's just getting more and more diverse?
Mm.
You know, how might this Al-Khazraji framework apply to new kinds of discrimination claims based on group identity that we're maybe just starting to see? It's certainly something worth mulling over.
Definitely food for thought.
Well, thanks for taking this deep dive with us today.